Josh.
Daniel.
Welcome back, man.
Man, how are you doing?
Dude, it's good. It's been a minute.
Yeah, dude, well, we took a break for the holidays and then tried to get started again, and things just wouldn't happen, man.
Oh, man, dude, I had a guy that works with me come running in here, and we was trying to record yesterday. Then we had a phone call, had to go and lock a door for a lady. Man, it's been crazy.
Yeah, thanks, Nick. We've done like four podcasts. You've been here for two of them. Appreciate that. Just kidding, buddy. And last episode was really good, man. We got a lot of positive feedback from it. Mostly harmless.
Dude, it was great. I enjoyed it. Man, it rolled out quick. It was cool. And I'm still watching for updates. And there really hasn't been anything else said about it here lately.
Yeah, I enjoy doing that one, man. It was fun to kind of get into that mystery and to think about why he did what he did and how he ended up like he did, man. And we really appreciate the feedback we got off our Facebook page.
And you know how it goes. If you haven't listened to it,
listen to it again.
And if you did listen to it,
listen to it again.
That's right. Make us all the monies.
All of it. We want to give a shout out real quick to those who did comment on the Facebook page and interact with the song.
Man, we had Miss Angela.
That was Lacey.
Laura.
And then Irina.
That's right. And I think people are still commenting on stuff.
Yeah, that's great. So we appreciate your feedback for Mostly Harmless. And because of that, we really wanted to try and give you another one that people could sink their teeth into and really think about and talk to with some, really, you know, come up with their own conclusions.
Right. You know, what we're covering today is the Vegas shooting. And the thing is, when it happened, there was all these crazy conspiracies out. And there was hundreds of conspiracies.
Well, the less true information and facts that you have, I believe the more conspiracy theories begin to spring forward.
Right. And so now that we have it where it's literally, this is what happened, and we have a rundown who it was, why he might have done it, it makes things way more clear.
Yeah, it really does.
That's really why I wanted to come back and kind of approach this. When you brought it up to me, I loved it for that reason.
Cool, man. Well, before we get started, I want to give a shout-out to our newest sponsor for this episode.
Ooh, who do we have?
Dude, that is Lumpy's Used Tires. Hey! Man, that's all he wrote. Just hey.
Just hey.
Yeah.
Lumpy's. That does not sound like a very trustworthy tire.
Man, in this market, in this economy, you got to do what you got to do. So you guys, go see Lumpy at Lumpy's Used Tires.
It's definitely one of those $29.95 tire places.
Yeah, man. And Lumpy got his commercial from Anchor Support. That's right. There's three levels from Anchor Support that you can help follow us at. 99 cents a month, I believe $4.99 a month. And then our top tier at $9.99 a month.
Ooh.
Yeah, and if you become a top tier member for 2 months, you can send us your information and your own idea for a funny commercial, and we'll put it on Lit.
Oh, I'm so ready for it. All they have to do is literally give us a name and we'll come up with something good for you.
Yeah, yeah. Or just tell us you want it done. It's fine. We just want your money.
That's all I want.
We're poor. Help. So you ready to get started, buddy?
Oh, let's do this.
Let's do it.
Go ahead, buddy.
So Stephen Craig Paddock was born April 9th, 1953 in Clinton, Iowa. He grew up in Tucson, Arizona, then in the Sun Valley neighborhood of Los Angeles. Was the oldest of four kids, and his dad, Benjamin Paddock, was a freaking bank robber who was arrested in 1960 when Stephen was only 7 years old.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That's not a good start for a life.
Yeah, not only that, but he escaped from prison in 1969 and was part of the FBI's most wanted list.
Whoa.
Yeah, according to Stephen's brother, Eric, he was never with my mom, and Stephen had limited interaction. Benjamin following the latter releases from prison. According to one of Paddock's ex-wives in a police interview, he had spoken about growing up with a single mother and never really talked about his dad. Paddock then attended Richard E. Byrd Middle School and Sun Valley High School. He graduated from John H. Francis Polytechnic High School in 1971 and then went on to graduate from California State University in Northridge in 1977 with a degree in business and administration.
Yeah, I couldn't really, I looked into it trying to find, you know, when he went to high school, people talking about it, you know, what he was like and all this. And people really didn't talk about this guy, like almost like he didn't exist.
Man, he looked like he was mean and didn't have a lot of friends.
He looked like his picture to be in the newspaper just warning you he was in the neighborhood.
And it smelled. Like if it was a scratch and sniff picture, it would smell.
Definitely. Not. It wouldn't smell like cherries.
No, garbage. Old bananas.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, during the 70s, he actually worked as a mail carrier, worked then he moved on to the IRS.
Oh, see, you got to be a certain person to work for the IRS.
Yep.
This is him.
That's it.
Yep.
This is the guy. He was a, and then he was a defense contract audit agency auditor, whatever that means. That is a big title.
Sounds like you got to be a dick to audit defense contracts.
Right. And also have just zero personality and probably zero emotion, which kind of rolls in later on in this story.
And no deodorant.
Yes. And no deodorant. We'll buy the pictures. No deodorant.
Yeah.
Yeah, him and his brother actually had a real estate business, and I believe that's where the majority of his money came in.
Yeah, because he had some money.
Yeah. And, man, he ended up becoming a multimillionaire.
Yeah. So Paddock lived in the greater Los Angeles area, and he owned personal property in Panorama City, Cerritos, and North Hollywood from the 1970s to the early 2000s.
Oh, that makes sense now. So he bought it when everything was still cheap.
Yeah, yeah. Also, he had two apartment buildings in Hawthorne, California, and he also owned an apartment complex in Mesquite, Texas that he had up until 2012, which he sold it.
Yeah, so, okay, so that makes a lot of sense now.
Yeah.
I mean, California back then, you could literally buy a house for 50 grand.
Yeah, yeah. His relatives go on to say that he was worth at least $2 million when he sold off his real estate assets.
But, you know, I think it was a little bit more than that. And this guy used to work for the IRS, so he knew how to hide money.
Yeah. Among his most profitable sales was an apartment complex that he purchased back in 2004 that gave him more than $500,000 in annual income by 2011.
Whoa. So not only did he sell and have a lot of money, but he's sitting here literally with $500,000 a year in his pocket.
Yeah. IRS records show he made $5 to $6 million in profits from its sale alone back in 2015.
Whoa. Could you imagine this guy's your landlord?
Yeah. So $5 to $6 million there, $2 million in another spot, $500,000 a year, fairly well. And because of that, he was an avid gambler. And although the extent at which he profited from gambling really isn't clear, he was known as a little bit of a high roller and was often seen in high limit rooms, but was not really known as a whale. And a whale is like a true high roller.
Right.
And to kind of give you some ideas, as long as my paper doesn't make too much noise for you guys, the best blackjack games at the Mandalay Bay in the high limit room have hand limits from simply $200 all the way up to $20,000 per hand.
Yeah, but the thing is, like, when you're a high roller, we could drive in there, and me and Josh pull up in a Maserati, have on our Gucci, the whole nine yards. We could deposit $500,000 into the casino's bank. But the thing is, if we don't spend that money, that bank does not care.
Not a high roller.
I mean, this guy spent money. I think the average that people spend when they're considered a high roller is like $500 to $1,000 per hand.
Yeah, you can't just have good credit and be considered a high roller. You've got to spend with them.
Oh, yeah. You got to make that money go somewhere.
Yeah. Now, Paddock was married and divorced two times over. First time, he was married from 1977 to 1979. And the second from 85 to 90. Both of them were listed in Los Angeles, California. The family members say that he was on good terms with both of his ex-wives, which I don't know any exes. I'm still
on. Well, I'm pretty sure the exes are going to stay in good terms with him when he's bringing in $500,000 a year.
You make a good point, yeah, sir. You make a good point.
It doesn't matter how creepy you are. As long as you're bringing in that money, they're going to stay on your good side.
Yeah. Paddock was said to be an atheist and would actually get onto one of his girlfriends whenever she would wear a Catholic cross because she was Catholic. He was known not to talk about politics or be affiliated with any type of political organizations. And he often complained about being sick and was sensitive to other chemical smells.
He was just smelling his own BO.
Yeah, dude, I'm telling you, get some degree.
Dude, I really do not like this guy.
No.
Like, even besides what he did, I just do not like this guy.
Yeah. Now, he lived in Texas and California, so he had multiple homes, and then in a freaking retirement community in Melbourne, Florida, from 2013 to 2015. And then in 2016, he moved from Florida to another retirement home in Mesquite, Nevada. Now, according to the property records there, he bought a new house in Mesquite in January of 2015 and then sold his two-bedroom home in Melbourne. Baller. Mm. Yeah, Paddock lived in Mesquite for several years with his at-the-time girlfriend who met in Reno. According to neighbors, they also lived together in Reno, so I guess they were a fairly serious couple. Many Mesquite residents recalled seeing him around town, and those that were familiar with Paddock described as somebody that didn't speak a lot and really kept to himself.
Well, that's when people described him, they always described him lacking any emotion. He never got excited or anything. He was pretty much just a blank kind of guy.
Yeah, and really kept to himself. Even the local gun community never said they saw him at any shooting ranges, gun clubs, or any type of events that they had.
Yeah, even the relationships he was in, even his marriages, stuff like that. I think it was an ex-girlfriend or a wife, you may remember more than I do, but she actually described it as they just kind of lived their own paths.
Yeah, yeah.
He did his thing, she did her thing. He sent her money, and that was it.
Yeah. Now, a friend of Paddock's that he knew from back in Australia, I believe it was, or an Australian friend that he knew from the Philippines, a dude got around, said that Paddock made his money by using algorithms to apply to gambling hands and then to the machines themselves. So I guess there was some math involved.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's why I can't gamble, guys. I tried it one time. I sat down, put some money into a slot machine. 5 minutes later, I realized it was a Sex and the City machine, and then it took all my money. That's all I have.
Well, you know, that's why I like digital craps. When I literally watched a buddy play it for like an hour, and I picked up on it pretty quick. And actually, I got up to like $700 one time, man. And I'm a $20 casino guy. So when I go to the casino, I literally bring like 20 bucks with me. Me and the wife will go. When that 20 bucks is up, I'm done. But I got this machine up to like $700.
Oh, wow.
And what it is, you watch the hands, and it literally kind of has a rhythm. Like, I know it kind of gets thrown off every now and then, but there is a rhythm to the way it goes. And I get up to like $700 off of like a $40 hand. And I'm sitting there, and my buddy reaches over and just goes, max bet, max bet, max bet, max bet.
Damn.
42 cents. Man, and it was the night before Valentine's Day. And I had went out with my buddies the night before Valentine's Day. And the wife was supposed to come and get breakfast with me the next morning. I was broke. And so when I was like $700, I was like, yeah, I can go buy. Like, I can go pay for lunch, like, you know, for breakfast or something. You know, the wife don't have to spend, you know, spend money. Yay. Man, she picked me up the next morning. Done been out all night. I smelled like booze. And on top of that, my $700 I had the night before was down to 42 cents.
Oh, man, you couldn't and, even get a oh, freaking man. McDouble.
Dude, and my wife is a saint for sticking with me.
She's a saint anyway.
Oh, absolutely, man.
One day, Catfish is going to come up missing, and people are going to know Stacy did it, but we're all just going to look the other way because she's been so nice about everything.
Hey, it'd be a good story for you.
Yes. Oh, interview with a killer. Speaking of interview with a killer, Daniel and I have been working on a really killer story that we're trying to get out to you later, and the only thing that has held us up is we have actually found a way to correspond with this convicted serial killer with a body count of well above 20 people. Can you believe that?
Man, they're saying 23 plus.
Yeah.
And right here in Louisiana. And he's at Angola. We're trying to reach him. We're going to get him.
Yeah, so stay tuned. We're working on that one for you. I guess, man, we should move on to, like, the last few months and everything really leading up on to the shooting itself.
Oh, man, yeah. And my condolences to any of the family, anybody that was there. This is a horrible, horrible part.
Yeah, we use humor to educate people and to sort of lighten the mood a little bit while we get this message across, but we mean the utmost respect when we do this.
Yeah, I work in entertainment, and this is possibly the worst imaginable thing that I could ever foresee happening.
Yeah. Now, in the time leading up to the shooting, Paddock reportedly began smelling from alcohol from early morning up until night. So he began drinking a lot. He had 3 confirmed prescriptions for anti-anxiety drugs such as Valium.
And when he went to the doctor, there was actually more prescriptions written to him, and he refused to take them.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And the guy, he was huge against pharmaceutical companies and everything else.
So Paddock's gun purchases spiked between October 2016 and September of 2017. So for roughly a year, he went on a gun buying purchasing streak. He purchased over 55 weapons in all, the majority of them rifles. And according to the ATF, he also purchased explosives, which I believe I have some pictures, and I will put that on Instagram and Facebook.
That was Tannerite,
yes,
if I'm right, yeah.
Us being from the South, we can go to a local hardware store and buy Tannerite all day long,
yeah.
And it's not a big deal.
Right, and Tannerite, you can stick a lighter to it, and it's not going to ignite.
Yeah, yeah.
You have to have a high-powered rifle to hit it for it to actually explode. And it's more, in when the explosion, it's not flames and everything else. It's literally just power. that comes out. I shot one off like 2 weeks ago.
Yeah. You can also check out a YouTube video where a guy shoots one on top of a lawnmower and the shrapnel from the lawnmower takes the bottom of his leg off.
Whoa.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. He was way too close.
Yeah, that's what terrified me. Like, I'm grateful he did not plant that or do something with it.
Yeah, prior to 2016, he had already purchased close to 30 firearms between 82 and 2016, but most of those were handguns and shotguns. His girlfriend is said to have noticed the increase in firearm-related purchases, but believed it was just a hobby. And once again, us being from the South, it is a major hobby.
Oh yeah, because I have a lot of buddies that'll just get into guns and just start buying them like crazy for over a couple of years.
Oh, myself and a good friend of ours, we'll go right across the river to the indoor range. Well, we used to before COVID, and we go once a month and, you know, just shoot and have fun.
Oh yeah, and rent you a gun for pretty cheap, get you some rounds.
Yeah,
have at it.
Yeah. Now, at Paddock's suggestion, a few weeks before the shooting, he talked his girlfriend into returning to her native country, which was the Philippines. So, was he going to get this? I thought she was mail order, but I guess I'm wrong. I guess he just met her while he was traveling.
Yeah. Okay. Looking for a bride in the Philippines.
Yeah.
Let's not kid that part. Yeah.
The morals on this man.
Yeah. So he sent her back to the Philippines.
Yeah, dude, got her a surprise airline ticket. And then wired her freaking $100,000 to buy a house over there. Also, she's like, are you breaking up with me? No, I loved you a long time.
Oh my God, dude. I love it, man.
Maybe we should get a disclaimer going by the next episode.
Oh, it'll be all right. Yeah, we'll be fine. Screw that. Yeah, and it was right around this time. Paddock actually rented a room overlooking a festival in Chicago. And then never showed up.
Yeah, that was Lollapalooza of 2017. Mm. And then before the Mandalay Bay shooting, he actually scoped out the Life is Beautiful concert in Las Vegas and brought suitcases and stuff with him to that one. Now, whether he was scouting, whether he actually had weapons, whether he just wanted to see if he could bring that many freaking suitcases into one place before somebody said something, we don't know.
But you know what? My honest opinion with this, getting away from the facts for half a second, going into opinion-based, I honestly think this guy wanted to carry out this act for a long time before. Years. 2 years. More.
Maybe like his claim to fame?
And he kept, right. And he would actually, but he would chicken out right before he would do it.
Okay.
Because that's what it sounds like to me. Like, he literally planned to do this stuff and then just chicken out. Like, Chicago, I think he literally just didn't get on the plane. Like, he freaked out. And I wonder if it was logistics, trying to get the guns to Chicago.
Very true. Very true. Because they weren't anywhere near his homes where everything else was within driving range.
But these other two were.
A few hours, and that he could be right there.
So I think we figured out Chicago right there.
Yeah, you can't shoot anything up when you don't have anything to shoot with.
That's right. What, are you going to drive all the way to Chicago with all these guns?
Yeah, they don't allow that on the plane.
That's it.
You don't want to roll through the wrong side of Chicago with all them guns anyway.
Nope. So, hey, we figured out Chicago.
Ah. Cha-ching.
But this kind of rolls in to... gets into when it happened. Yeah, so on September 9th, Paddock actually reserves the room at the Mandalay Bay Hotel.
And then on September 25th, Paddock checks into the hotel with a checkout date of October 2nd. He begins to roll in one bag by himself and then has a bellman use a freaking luggage cart to bring up four other bags at this time.
Yeah, this is, and then right on September 26th, Paddock actually wires $50,000 over to his wife in the Philippines.
So she's received a total, I didn't mean to cut you off, buddy, but now she's received a total of $150,000 at this point.
Just slide it over to her.
Yeah.
Yeah, on the 27th, Paddock insists on relocating to another room. So he was in another room at first. What was the original room number?
I have that in my notes, guys. I have notes. Check it out. Now, originally, he was booked in 33-235, so that means he was going to be on the 33rd floor in room 235. He requested to go one floor down and ended up in 32-134 and 32-135.
Yep. And then on the same night that he transferred rooms, he actually went back, buys a bunch of luck baggage, razor blades, fake flowers, and a vase, and a styrofoam ball
makes
at Walmart.
No sense at all. On September 28th, Paddock buys a .308 caliber bolt-action rifle from a gun store in Mesquite and then wire transfers an additional $50,000 to an account in the Philippines.
So he's just sending his wife over there just tons and tons and tons of money.
Yeah. Paddock later returned to a gun range and then went back to Las Vegas. At this time, he brings in another two rolling suitcases and a laptop bag into his room.
Yep, September 30th, he actually spent most of the day in his room. He kind of stayed shut up. Nobody really seen him that much, and he had a do not disturb sign on his door.
Yeah, he was whacking it to some weird stuff.
Well, that goes into the end of the story, too.
I won't ruin it too much then. Yeah. On October 1st, the day of the attack, so now our timeline is going to start getting more and more compressed. Paddock returned to Mandalay Bay early in the morning, and he gambled for 4 hours. At this time, he brings in two more rolling suitcases and another bag to his room. And throughout the afternoon, officials say he is detected opening and closing the doors to his suite multiple times, probably preparing for his attack. So you can kind of think that Mandalay Bay has such a security protocol and systems in place that they actually know every time you put your key in, every time you shut the door, every time you open it, every time you turn the deadbolt.
If a door is left open.
Exactly. Or if a door can't be opened.
Yep. And it was at 9:30 in the morning where he actually locks the door.
No, that was at 9:36 p.m., buddy.
Oh, p.m.
Yeah, we're at nighttime.
Whoa.
Yeah. So at 9:36 p.m., he deadbolts the door to one of his room and then deadbolts the door to his other room 10 minutes later. And they've got that from the electronic surveillance. At 10 p.m., security guard Jesus Campos arrives via elevator on the 32nd floor to investigate an alert of an open door in a guest room down the hall from Paddock's suite. Campos checks the stairwell door first and finds that it's blocked his entry to the floor. From minutes earlier. So while he's going around checking this, Paddock is actually starting to secure the area. And he secured it with a simple metal L bracket.
Oh, this was really simple, too. It literally was just the shape of an L and just lodged in and screwed into the door.
Yeah, I want you to pick back up on 10:04, buddy.
Yeah, at 10:04, Campus calls the security dispatch and says the door is blocked. His call is routed to the factory's maintenance department, which dispatches maintenance engineer Steven Shuck to go to the floor.
Yeah, at 10:05, this is when Paddock fires two initial shots at the Las Vegas Village, the open-air venue that was across the street from his hotel where the Route 91 Harvest Music Festival is being held, and there's more than 20,000 people there. Now, before we go on in our timeline, yeah. I'd really like Daniel to tell us a little bit about the Route 91 Music Festival.
Yeah, it said 20,000. The actual count of people was actually over 22,000 that was in this little area. And so, but the hotel, when I first heard about this, I thought that he was just shooting straight down into like a parking lot area or into an area below him. No, this was like a quarter of a block, a six-lane highway, another quarter of a block, and then 22,000 people. In a small area. And he sat there and he actually lined up the shot and everything else and fired off these two shots. At the time, there was actually that weekend, what it was is the Route 91 Harvest Festival was this huge festival. It was country music. It was in its fourth year running and was packed. And that weekend, you had Jason Aldean, Eric Church, Sam Hunt, and then there was a long line of other musicians that were going to be playing.
And wasn't it Jason Aldean that was on the stage at the time?
That's it. He was actually the grand. He was. That's why there were so many people there at the time.
Oh, he was the main event.
He was the main event.
Oh, he actually, I didn't think about that.
Yeah, this guy actually waited until there was the most amount of people out there before he started shooting.
Wow.
And I think before he fired a couple of shots, he used a hammer and broke the glass out more.
Yes, he did. And we have pictures of not only his viewpoint from where he began to fire at, but of what he used and the hammer that he used to break the bulletproof glass, our shatterproof glass. It's hurricane proof. It's something proof. It's pretty strong.
It's thick. Yeah. And something to think about, man. This hotel is giant, man. Yeah, the hotel actually had over 3,200 rooms, not including the bars, the clubs, the 24 elevators.
Yeah, the restaurants, the casino itself.
135,000 square feet.
It's huge, man. It's the largest casino, I believe, on the Strip, correct?
It's one of the largest, and there's 43 floors.
Wow. So back to our timeline, guys. At 10:06 p.m., Campos, who is the security officer that is working at Mandalay Bay, here's what he later described as rapid drilling noises, and what I'm going to believe is automatic gunfire. At that time, Paddock fires about 100 rounds at concert goers. Now, Paddock, who has placed surveillance cameras outside of his room, starts shooting through the door while looking at the security camera. There's security footage on his laptop. Not even really aiming, but just blindly firing through the door. He hit the security guard in the leg. Now, Campos, who is unarmed, takes cover and radioed into the hotel dispatcher and gives the room number that he's firing from on the 32nd floor.
Yeah, and the security officer actually thought he got shot by a BB gun or something.
Yeah, he was in shock from it. Now, hold on for a second. Could you imagine also being on the 32nd floor when he has secured himself in with these L brackets?
Oh, because he actually locked the entire floor down. I think he had one door for an exit, and he could have taken the entire floor hostage.
Absolutely could have.
And Paddock actually resumes firing at 10:07 p.m. Hundreds of rounds start going off, shooting straight down at the festival. So he's just firing hundreds of rounds off, pop, 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 with the bump stops. So the bump stop presses against the stock and actually causes it to the trigger to kind of pull quicker.
Yeah, I will go in and explain a little more about the firearms and the weapons that he used later on here in the story. That way there's no real confusion about what happened.
But yeah, that's why they heard that sound there, that rapid pop, 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 pop. And
there were two police officers whose were actually already at the Mandalay Bay and for another call. They begin to head upstairs, presumably to try and find the source of the gunfire, along with two armed security guards now from the Mandalay Bay. Over the next 2 minutes, Paddock takes several pot shots at a jet fuel storage tank at the nearby airport. He actually hit the tank twice, but it didn't ignite the fuel.
Right. I think one didn't penetrate, but one did. Luckily, the ignition point is so high for it that the round itself wouldn't cause it to go off.
Yeah.
Yeah, at 10:10, the maintenance engineer actually arrives at the 32nd floor, and Campos yells for him to take cover. Paddock starts firing down the hallway, and Chuck Radio's hotel dispatch sent a police to the 32nd floor.
So this building engineer didn't realize there was gunshots and shit going on above him and just kept trucking on to the 32nd floor? Just
kept on walking up. At 10:11, the two police officers arrive on the 31st floor, one floor below Paddock, as a gunman resumes firing into the concert crowd. Pop, 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 pop.
At 10:12, two armed Mandalay Bay security officers also arrive on the 32nd floor, and the police and security officers on the 31st floor realize that the shooting is coming from above them.
Well, you got to think, such a huge place. I mean, trying to find the source of the sound would be about impossible.
At 10:15, Paddock fires his final shots at concert goers.
This is where it gets weird to me.
Yeah. Now, at 10:16, the two police officers on the 31st floor enter the stairwell outside the 32nd floor hallway, but do not actually confront Paddock.
Whoa, I didn't know that. So they're just sitting there chilling.
Yeah.
I mean, freaking out.
Yeah.
So they finally breach the sealed hallway, the doorway out of the stairway. So that's why they were sitting there. It was had the L bracket in place and was completely sealed up.
Now, that wasn't until 10:57 p.m. So roughly 40 minutes or so passed from the officers making it into the 32nd floor hallway and then them actually breaching into the hallway.
So that's where it just, 40-something minutes.
Yeah, well, they had to wait for SWAT and everybody to really get together. These things don't happen as fast as people would like them to. Mm. At 11:20 p.m., police use explosives to blow open Paddock's door, and they discover him dead from a single gunshot wound to the head.
That's when they actually, 11:26, they actually breach the interior door for the second room, because they didn't know how many shooters there were at this point.
No, they didn't.
And that's where the police officer accidentally fired three rounds into the room.
Yeah, he hit him with a burst. He wasn't playing.
So what exactly did they find when they got into the room?
Yeah, they found a lot of stuff. And first I'm going to start out with the weapons that they found, and then we'll move on into some of the other things. First off, he had 24 weapons. 23 of them were rifles and one handgun, a .38 caliber Smith & Wesson revolver, which he took his own life with. He had fired 1,100 rounds, and that includes 200 rounds that he fired into the hallway itself at Campos. He also had another 4,000 rounds of unused ammunition. Now, out of the 23 rifles he had, he actually used 15 of them, which makes no sense at all. And from those, the AR-15s, six of them didn't even have sights. So while they all had bump stocks and could be basically put into as close to an automatic position as you can without having the proper certificates and licenses for them. So he could fire six of them fully automatic, but with no way to aim it. He had five of them that actually had sights where he could aim, and two more just as backups with no magazines, but they also had bump stocks and EOTech sights on them as well. He had five AR-10-308s with scopes and bipods. He actually only fired two rounds from the 308. Actually, no, eight rounds from two of the 308s. And I think what he did is he began to shoot with those, realized he wasn't going to be actually able to hit anything, and that's when he switched over to his ARs. With a grand total of 1,058 rounds from 58 weapons, you had 1,049 of these rounds from 12 of the ARs, eight rounds from two 308s, and one final round from a 38 caliber.
Which is what he finished his life with.
Yes, and if you're not too squeamish, check out the pictures.
Yeah, and he ended up wounding 411 people with those guns, and killed 60.
Oh, man.
60 deaths. And that distance, that's what with the guns, we had discussed this before. What got me with the guns, though, is most of them were like open-sighted. And this was a huge distance. I mean, he was literally just pointing in the direction and pulling a trigger at this point.
Yeah. Now, here's a list of some of the other things that they found. He had a laptop computer, which he used for the surveillance cameras. He had a disassembled laptop missing a hard drive that was on the floor.
I wonder why there's a hard drive missing.
He had power tools. He had empty ammunition boxes. He had this weird breathing apparatus from a scuba mask and some tubing and a fan that would not have been effective on his best day.
You have millions of dollars you can blow at this point. Yeah, and you make something out of a scuba. It sounded like a last second thought.
He sounds like the smartest special kid in the state.
Oh, he definitely rode the short bus to do this.
Yeah, he had hand tools, drill bits, screwdrivers, suitcases, towels, plenty of empty rifle magazines. He had a laptop that was connected to the hallway surveillance cameras, which I believe I had already mentioned. He had tons and tons of extra magazines. And later during the investigation, they found Paddock's minivan. A minivan. Ugh. But he had a 2017 Chrysler Pacifica. He had 22-pound containers of exploding targets.
Whoa, I didn't know it was 22 pounds.
10 1-pound containers of exploding targets and two 20-pound bags of explosive precursors. So that was all the Tannerite. He had a few more mags, some ammunition, some suitcases, and towels. Now, there's one thing that was not mentioned in any of this. He had no ammunition carry rig, basically. So if he had attempted to fight his way out, the man literally had no way to prep and arm himself to make it to that van.
No. This is a one-way mission. And I think he realized that at the end. That's why he killed himself as quick as he did.
Yeah.
Yeah, he took the wuss way out.
Yeah, there's so many open theories, so many unanswered questions, and that's why we wanted to bring this to you guys. We love the way you interacted with us before, and we want to keep that going.
Yeah, and let's not forget, man, he actually had kiddie porn on
what?
Some. Yeah, on the
mic drop.
Yeah, that's why the missing hard drive. I remember when all this happened, the conspiracy theories went around the missing hard drive, the computers being in pieces, and all this stuff. When the FBI actually did the forensics on the laptop, they found a bunch of kiddie porn on the computer.
Okay.
And so in my theory, that's why he got rid of the other hard drive and the other computer.
Oh, it makes perfect sense.
Yeah, he didn't want to embarrass himself even further after killing 60 people.
Has he seen his driver's license picture? Dude was a walking embarrassment.
Yeah, that's what I was telling you earlier, man. After seeing his picture, it makes complete sense. And so the guy was just a lunatic, man. Screw this dude.
Yeah, I hope he's getting the pitchfork right now.
Oh, yeah. Getting it hard.
Well, guys, what did you think? That was the 2017 Las Vegas shooting at the Mandalay Bay perpetrated by Stephen Paddock.
Make sure you check us out on Facebook. Check us out on Instagram.
Yeah, that's Facebook, Lost in Thought. Instagram at Stay Lost in Thought. YouTube at Lost in Thought Media. And if you really, really want to help us out, guys, check out Anchor. hit one of the support buttons and let us know. We can't wait to hear from you guys again. Across from me is Daniel. I'm not Theo Vaughn. Remember, not all who wander are lost. Till next time, guys, stay lit.